I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. We've talked about the syrup trap before recently when the National Post's Tristan Hopper was a guest. He contributes to what has very quickly become Canada's favorite humor magazine. At the time, I said it was UBC's humor magazine, and though it had its genesis at the University of British Columbia, it's setting its sights on making Canadians laugh. It's already made Vancouverites and others laugh and or scratch their heads with their biting satire, and a new Patreon campaign that they've started wants to help keep up the publication, keep it alive and sustainable. Go to patreon.com/syruptrap and take out a subscription. What you do there is commit to a monthly contribution, and it's a great model for sustaining crowdfunding. I'm a contributor because I think the syrup trap, besides being funny and sardonic, is necessary in the discourse. We need satire now more than ever. Nick Zarzecki.
Zarzecki. Perfect.
Is the syrup trap's founder and editor-in-chief. He joins me now to talk about the Patreon campaign, how the syrup trap came about, and where he sees its future. He is a graduate of UBC and a writer. You can follow him on Twitter at Nick Zarzecki.
Zarzecki.
That's the Twitter handle. The website for more is at nickz.ca, and of course the Syrup Trap's website is at syruptrap.ca. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program in studio, as it were, Nick Zarzecki. Mr. Zarzecki, good morning.
Thank you. Thank you for that introduction, Joe.
You came in here about 5-10 minutes ago. We sat chatting, and before I started record, I should have asked you how to pronounce your name.
It's, you know what, I let people pronounce it the way they want to. It's a Polish last name. The way Polish people say it is Zarzecki, but the default Canadian standard pronunciation seems to have settled on Zarzecki, so yeah. I'm happy using that.
And thanks for coming in to do this. I understand you live just in the neighborhood. So
I do.
This is a short walk for you, I guess, to come down here.
It is.
Who came up with the name The Syrup Trap?
So, the name comes from a very popular Mitch Hedberg joke. Mitch Hedberg is my favorite comedian, and he has a joke, it's just one line, where he says, a waffle is like a pancake with a syrup trap. Very cute, very Canadian, too,
yeah.
I think we've adopted maple syrup as a symbol, obviously, of this country, and, I like Mitch Hedberg's sense of humor, and I like that joke in particular, and I thought it was just a cute name to give to the publication. There was actually a publication called The Syrup Trap before this one. About a year before we started the humor magazine, I tried to get a campus news and gossip blog off the ground, modeled after a very popular similar blog in the United States called Ivygate. It's a blog that covers the entire Ivy League.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to get something similar going for Canadian universities, but that slowly petered out, mainly because I think Canadian university students don't see themselves in the same way that American university students do.
In the sense that they don't find the humor, say, or they don't have a sense of humor in talking about themselves, say? Or?
I think it's because most Canadian college students don't really think about campus life that much. I don't think they're nearly as connected to their campuses as American students are. I think, you know, in the United States you have this it's this stereotype of, you know, I'm going to go to this campus, I'm going to live in this beautiful gothic architectural university, and I'm going to study here for 4 years, and I'm going to become a scholar. I think most UBC students see university life in a very different way. They see it as, you know, I'm going to stay at home, I'm going to commute to campus every day. Canadian college life is very different than college life in the United States in many ways.
Yeah, we live close to our colleges and universities,
right,
as opposed to, say, having to move there for 4 years.
Right. And that was kind of what inspired the humor magazine version of The Syrup Trap, was this desire to get something going on campus that was fun, that every student would read and every student would enjoy.
And are there other magazines, like publications like this, at other universities? Or
The College Humor magazine format is a very popular and very old format. It kind of had its golden age in the 1920s when the Harvard Lampoon and the Yale Record were really started to get going, and when this large umbrella magazine called College Humor, first launched in the United States. There was actually a very popular magazine at the University of Toronto called the Goblin, which was kind of Canada's only major contribution to that movement. There is a popular College Humor magazine at Queen's University called I think Golden Words, which is run by the Engineering Undergraduate Society there. They've got a thing going on campus there, but those are kind of the only spaces where you still see humor magazines really existing and thriving in communities where, you know, there's a vibrant collegiate population that wants to share in a joke. You don't really see it outside of university campuses, though.
So the goal now for the Syrup Trap is to go beyond, say, UBC, mm-hmm. beyond Vancouver, go
Absolutely.
National.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because I think something that I was talking to someone about a couple of weeks ago is that as we've kind of moved off campus and we've started pursuing a national audience, we've kind of realized that Canada is in many ways just a larger version of UBC. You have a large population that is very disconnected from its central government. The only way to make friends and build a career is to join some kind of club or society. And, you know, we think just as much as UBC needed one, we think Canada needs a humor magazine.
And you've done very well for yourselves in the couple of years that you've done this, and in that you've gotten attention from, say, beyond Vancouver. I mean, when you poke fun at Margaret Atwood or Peter Mansbridge, they seemed to get the joke, didn't they?
They did. Peter Mansbridge, who seems to be handing out Twitter favorites very sparingly, favorited one or two of the articles that we wrote about him, and Margaret Atwood retweeted our Clones Bridge series when we posted that. So we do seem to have gotten their attention. And people in the Toronto journalism sphere especially seem to be taking notice of us. So we are drumming up some attention outside of Vancouver, and that's very encouraging and fantastic to see.
And Jesse Brown of Canada Line, he's a fan as well, isn't he?
He is a fan. I had the chance to speak with him over the phone a few weeks ago, where I just asked him for advice. I knew that he, apparently when he was younger, he would actually send, you know, before he was even a writer or a journalist, he would send fake press releases out to publications, you know, fake news out to publications to see what would happen. So, you know, he's been doing this for way longer than we have. So I thought I'd ask him for his advice, and yeah, recently he donated to our Patreon and said some very flattering words on Twitter about us, so we're very happy to have his support.
And I guess he didn't start Patreon, but I guess the way we know of Patreon is because of what he did with his publication, with Canada Land.
Absolutely, that was where I heard about it, that was the inspiration. If you look at our Patreon, it's basically an exact copy of his. Even our video is just me directly appealing to the camera. I actually think that's a great style of video for Patreon and Kickstarter. Jesse was actually telling me when we were talking on the phone that he initially tried to make this very fancy Kickstarter-like video where, you know, soaring language describing Candleland, but he decided instead to just do a direct appeal to the camera, and we just went with the same model, and it's been successful so far.
He has had great success in terms of promoting himself and getting people to fund him on Patreon, and it's now they're over $10,000 so a month that he has in revenue, so he can build the site and he can pay himself, pay others, and he's already producing other shows. I guess that's the goal for you, is that you want to build the Syrup Trap into something that is sustaining. I mean, it's one thing to kickstart something online and you know, get a large chunk of money, I guess, at the outset. But if you don't have it month to month, you're not going to be able to survive. And I guess that's what you guys want to do.
Absolutely. We really sincerely think that it doesn't matter how much enthusiasm you have for a project, and it doesn't matter how much free time you have. The only way to really keep something like this going is to pay people to do it. I actually tried to start a national general interest magazine with a couple journalism friends a year ago, and we did something very similar to what we're doing with the Syrup Trap now. We put together a team of writers, and we just decided that we were going to start this magazine and see if people would read it. But money really wasn't an issue. We thought we could do this just in our spare time, just completely dependent on our enthusiasm. But we quickly found that career got in the way.
Mm-hmm.
Really, the only way to keep a group of people together and keep something like this going and to sustain something like this really is to pay people for their time. Time really isn't free.
Yeah, and you have found, and I think we all understand this, is that there is a need for satire in our discourse in this country. I mean, and we have humor shows, obviously, in this country, and you know, we're of a generation that probably finds a lot of that passé, say, you know what I mean? And so the way you're coming towards it, I think, is unique in the sense that this is something that the young people, and I hate to use that, but savvy internet users, say, they don't have to be young, will go to and will read. And they have been reading in great numbers, haven't they?
They have been. We have about 100,000 monthly readers at this point. So we have, it does seem like we've found a formula that works for our audience. Our audience is mostly younger folks. I'd say most of our readers are between the age of 18 and 35. But we do have older readers as well. I think we have a very particular style that is very different from what I would call the CBC mainstream comedy style, the kind of cute Canadiana that Rick Mercer and the Sarah's 22 Minutes does. I think we take more risks with our comedy. I think we can be a little bit meaner, a little bit more scathing. I think we're also a lot sillier. We take ourselves a lot less seriously than I think a lot of satirists do. I think that's one problem with a lot of political satire, at least attempts at political satire, both in Canada and outside of Canada, is political satirists fall into this trap of taking themselves very seriously. I think we benefit from being a little bit sillier, a little bit lighter, also maybe a little bit weirder.
Yeah, and I guess more American in that sense, because, I mean, they're satirists there. I mean, you look at people like Jon Stewart and John Oliver.
Mm-hmm.
They're relentless.
They are, absolutely. But you know what? One comparison we come up against a lot is The Onion. I mean,
yeah.
We really are doing kind of a copy of The Onion in Canada, and we do want to go beyond that. We really want to do more than just news satire in the future. But I think even in doing news satire, we found something. We found a formula that's slightly different from The Onion's. The Onion is a very depressing publication to read sometimes. The jokes that they make are sometimes very dark. I think they don't think very highly of their audience. They're sometimes very mean-spirited.
Yeah.
Whereas I think our headlines and our articles are a little bit sillier than The Onion's, a little bit less depressing, and they depend a lot less on, you know, being biting and depressing than they do on finding the absurdity in something.
And we seem to be very interested in comedy. I mean, we're hip to comedy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just look online at people's tweets, and you know how hilarious they think John Oliver was on Sunday night, or comedians like him. I mean, we seem to. I guess we're. Do you think we are more savvy in terms of our comedy?
I think Canada is, first of all, on a per capita basis. I don't think any other country has produced more comedians than Canada. The problem is they all leave immediately. And I also think Canada has the most vital comedy audience. I think I read once somewhere that both The Onion and The Daily Show have more of an audience in Canada on a per capita basis than they do in the United States. I think this is the best country to perform comedy in. I think this is the best country. We're the best comedy consumers in the world, I think, or the most passionate comedy consumers. So it's really paradoxical to me that we don't have comedic institutions. We don't have a Daily Show, a Saturday Night Live, an Onion.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. It's just mind-boggling to me that with audiences and with talent at this level, that we don't have something like that.
So what's the goal then? Is it to hold powerful people to account? Is it to have fun? Is it to, I mean, it, I guess it's all of those things, isn't it?
I think it is. I think our main goal, whenever we write a joke, whenever we're in a meeting, is first and foremost to write something that makes us laugh and that is funny. And I think everything else comes second. I do think we'd be lying and fooling ourselves if we said that we weren't political. I do think our writer's room, in the end, does seem to slant left of center, you know. We are a young liberal crowd in the end, but, you know, there is room in the writer's room for people of other political persuasions, and I think the reason why we're able to do that is because we value humor and whether or not it makes us laugh over anything else. And I do think being political can bring out certain absurdities that are funny. And I do think, you know, holding people to account is sometimes just hilarious. You know, it makes you laugh. But I think the humor comes first, and everything else comes second.
And if we just look at it politically, you've taken shots at all the three political leaders, Mr. Mulcair, Mr. Trudeau, and Mr. Harper.
Right, because these are all human beings who all have flaws. And if we didn't pick on all three, we'd be fooling ourselves. These are all humans with flaws.
And they're so ripe for making fun of, don't you think?
Absolutely. Each character has something to them that is ripe for satire. So, yeah.
Well, when you look at John Oliver and his success, I mean, I don't know if you saw the thing he did recently with Edward Snowden. I mean, that was just remarkable in terms of comedy.
I actually didn't see the Snowden thing. What did he do?
He started with one of those rants on surveillance and the renewal of the Patriot Act, and then says that he went to Russia last week to interview Edward Snowden, and then interviews Edward Snowden, and it was almost like watching 60 Minutes in the sense that, you know, I mean, he had funny things. I mean, he had showed Snowden a picture of his penis, and use that as a reference in terms of how the government looks at our emails and the sort in our communication. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was also, I mean, I'd never seen a more informative piece on what the government's doing, and that's John Oliver, and that's not, you know, 60 Minutes or.
Yeah, I think what you're pointing at here, and I think when people talk to John Stewart about this, you know, when he was at his prime, people were accusing him of, you know, being a more informative source or more political than many journalists, and he would brush it off and say, "Oh, I'm just a guy that makes jokes." I think he was being disingenuous then. I do think satire can be extremely useful when it comes to finding the truth, and I think what you're pointing at here is just the fact that comedians take more risks than almost anyone else.
Yeah.
That doing comedy is so freeing because people expect you to be absurd. They expect you to say ridiculous things. And so, you know, all the rules go out the window and you just take risks. And sometimes you find truths that are more profound than anyone else can find.
And he does such immense research.
Oh,
intense
yeah.
research.
He's so good at what he does. Yeah, the whole team over there is fantastic. He's got a fantastic writer's room. Good satire, you know, involves many of the same things that good journalism involves. You need to know your stuff. You need to know what it is you're criticizing, what it is you're making fun of. And, yeah, sometimes that results in, you know, findings that are just as interesting as the findings of a major journalism project.
So Rick Mercer is still on the air, apparently. I don't happen to watch him.
Know.
Yeah, and I had to look up whether Air Force was still on the air, and apparently it is. And
really?
And 22 Minutes, obviously, still there. But your reaction obviously speaks to just how relevant those institutions are.
Yeah, I don't think anyone my age watches those shows. I think I watched Rick Mercer when I was like 8 years old, and I have fond memories of watching his show with my parents. But when it comes to something that I'd watch in my own time for fun, I wouldn't watch any of those shows, simply because I think there's no fresh talent in those writing rooms, it seems. It seems very much a project that you know, older folks at the CBC who have been there for many decades are still managing, and there doesn't seem to be very much room in those shows for new kinds of humor and experimentation. And no, I don't think they're doing a very good job of being relevant at all.
You're seeing some good work, though, from CBC Radio. I don't know how much of that you listen to, but I mean, the Jonathan Goldstein thing, Wiretap, I think is great.
Yeah, no, there are talented people at the CBC, but I think what's missing is like a big show, a big institution that attracts the best writers in Canada, that pays them well. I think one major problem we have in Canada is that there are basically no full-time paid comedy writer gigs right now. I mean, you get hired, I've never written for a TV show in Canada, but from what I understand, you get hired on a contract basis, you work on a show for 6 months or 12 months, and then you're out looking for a job again. There's no place in Canada right now where you can really hone your craft as a humor writer. And I think that's, you know, resulting in an environment where there are no good shows.
People think of comedy as stand-up comedy.
They do.
Yeah. Which is not, I mean, it is, but it also isn't.
No, there's improv, there's writing, there's more experimental kinds of sketch comedy. There's a whole spectrum of comedy that really isn't represented in media, but that can be just as enjoyable to watch and experience,
I've talked to humorists in the past, and some of the satirists say that they see their work as doing the Lord's work, say, and that they have to take out people from time to time, that they have to make fun of people that deserve to be made fun of. When you gaze across the country and look at sort of the famous people that we know, whether they're politicians or celebrities, are there people in particular that you think need to be cut down?
It's funny because one challenge we have at the Serp Trap is finding symbols and people that all Canadians recognize and know. In the United States, it's very easy to make fun of people because everyone is very acquainted and familiar with American political culture. The United States has these institutions that just everyone hears about all the time in the news. From a very young age, you learn to, you know, be very reverent of the founding fathers of the United States. In Canada, I don't think people are as plugged into politics and, you know, a national culture as they are in the United States. So it's a challenge to find people that everyone knows about. So I think one thing that we're doing is we're slowly learning about the Canadian landscape, and we're still trying to find touchstones for everyone to that everyone understands. So I actually can't really.
I mean, we mentioned two already, Mansbridge and Atwood.
Sure, those are very recognizable folks, and Atwood does put out bad books sometimes, and Mansbridge is supposedly somewhat of a diva at the CBC, so I'm sure there's plenty of material there. I'm sure we'll be writing more about those folks.
And do you all at the Serp Trap, when you sit down and you meet with one another and talk about what you want to do, and do you think of the line and where that is and how not to cross it, or do you think that we need to cross it?
I don't think we see a line. I think we understand the Serp Trap as something that has a very particular voice and style. Like I mentioned before, it's a silly publication that has a certain way of seeing the world, and it's less we're not going to cross this line than it is, does this fit with our voice? Does this fit with the kind of humor we've published in the past? If we do have an idea that doesn't quite fit in the mold, recently what we've been doing is we've been publishing articles in a second section of the site that we've been developing. It's called Features. It's where we're putting all of our experimental stuff, something that I want to work on and develop. So even if something doesn't make the news desk, which is the main section on the Serp Trap, we still try and get it out there and see what people think of it.
I guess the line changes day to day, hour by hour, because of social media, because of technology, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I really can't think of a line that we cross. I do think one thing that we try and stay away from is, you know, certain. We're not a very vulgar publication. Yeah. We don't swear a lot, you know, but that's more of a style thing than it is a not crossing the line thing. It's less that we don't cross a line, and it's more just we have a certain sensibility, and we have a certain personality, you know?
Last week, the president of UBC, there was a body found on the property.
There was, yes.
Yeah. So, do you think because there's a different president, mm-hmm. let's say Dr. Toop, is that how you pronounce his mm-hmm. name?
Stephen Toop.
Yeah. Do you think that could have been poked fun at, say, or not the obviously the death of a
sure.
person, but say the president of UBC?
Sure. I think that's an example of a story where we don't know all the details.
Yeah.
And that's something we would leave alone until we understand the extent of the situation. I don't know. It depends. I actually don't know what's going on there. I don't know the full story. So all I know from what I understand is that they found a body and that's it.
Yeah.
I don't think we'd wade into something that's as tentative and as unknown as that.
It was a busy news day, if I recall, because then that was the oil spill as well.
Yes, it was. It was a crazy day for Vancouver News, yeah.
Yeah. And so what do you do in terms of your day? Do you what do you read? What do you watch? What do you listen to? And I guess all of that would be fodder for the website.
Absolutely. Well, my day consists of, I read National Post, Globe and Mail, all the major national outlets.
Online?
Yeah. Completely online. I'll read a little bit of local news, and if something comes to mind, then I'll just write down an idea. Almost all of our ideas are written down in headline form. We don't write an article until we're happy with the headline, so I have just this giant list on my computer of potential headlines. And then I'll go through my day doing, less creative work, more menial work, like maybe marketing stuff or mm-hmm. organizing an event or something. And ideas will come to me, and I'll write them down. And then what we do as a team is we'll bring headline ideas to a meeting, which happens once a week, and we'll read the headline ideas out. And whatever headlines get the most laughs in the room, we develop into pieces. It's a very scientific process. If it gets laughs, it gets developed. It's the exact process that The Onion uses in their writing room. And it's been very successful so far.
How big's the team?
Our meetings are usually, it fluctuates between 5 people and 15 people, depending on how busy people are. Right now, we kind of have a group of about a dozen to 15 people who occasionally do contribute. They'll make a video here, they'll write an article there. A lot of us are friends, too, so we
hang out. And you're all the same cohort, the same age group?
Recently, people, who have been out of school for a while have been getting in touch with us. We, very recently, Tristan joined us, and I don't think Tristan's been in school for a while. A guy named Ryan Abbott also recently joined us. He's a fantastic writer, and he's been out of school for a while. But mostly, it's recent graduates or current students at UBC still. We meet once a week, and we then go off home and we write up the articles and then we post them.
I've always thought and I had hoped that to a certain extent Jesse Brown does this in terms of how he monitors the media and holds them to account. But when you look at Jon Stewart, he looks at, say, how the news is given to the consumer and pokes fun at, say, certain things we see or hear. Did you see that as something that you all want to do in terms of say, holding to account the media in this country? Because there's a lot of stuff. We live in this city, Vancouver. It's a pretty big news market in terms of it's a very competitive market where all all the stations put their resources in their newscasts. Yet at the same time, there isn't really a culture of, say, looking at it critically. Because, some of the stuff they do, they're good journalists in this town, but some of it can be awful sometimes. So, did you see that as something that you guys want to do?
I think you make a very good point that Jon Stewart is a media critic in many ways, and I think Jesse Brown did talk about that in his Patreon video, or at least he's talked about, wanting to be kind of a daily show for mm-hmm. Canada, holding media to account. I think the fact that we're talking to a Canadian audience means we have to be careful about not being hacks. Canadian media culture is very concentrated and it can be very inside baseball sometimes. Mm-hmm. And the trick is to find find things to make fun of that everyone can share in and make fun of with us. So if there is a national story published by someone like the National Post or the Globe and Mail that we think was handled in a poor way, we'll write about it. When it comes to the Vancouver, that sounds a little bit more inside baseball, and
people don't want to ruin their chances of getting a job, say at whatever station or newspaper.
Absolutely, yeah. We have plenty of journalists at the Serp Trap, and I think it's finding a balance, and it's finding something to make fun of that everyone can understand. And again, I think that's just a product of being in Canada, where we don't have, you know, a Fox News or a CNN, or we don't have all these national news networks mm-hmm. that people watch all the time. We have the CBC.
Yeah.
We have two large national newspapers. And that's kind of it. Those are the only things that really tie us together media-wise. Every other kind of media is very local.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, it's just finding that thing that everyone knows about, you know?
So you're at, we're speaking on Saturday afternoon, and at this point, the initial goal was $1,000 a month.
Yes.
From Patreon subscribers, and you're about halfway?
We're about halfway there.
It's been a week into it?
It's been one week so far.
Yep. Yeah. And so let's say you get to 1,000. What do you want to do with it?
That's mainly going to paying a copy editor and myself, a part-time editor, just for our time and to keep the website up. And there are so many miscellaneous costs that come across and putting together meetings and stuff. Really what you're doing is you're paying for the time of a few editors. When we get to our second goal, which is $4,000, that at that point we'll be paying all of our contributors a minimum of $50 an article. That is competitive with places like The Onion and College Humor and mm-hmm. the few humor sites that actually do pay contributors for articles. At $4,000 a month, we'll be in a place where, you know, we'll actually be paying for people's time.
So the last couple of years have been sort of pro bono work on your part and the others, right? Yeah.
Completely pro bono. We're all poor recent college grads, so it's been pro bono work with no savings or no extra money. And it's really been kind of a struggle to do anything beyond just publishing blog posts.
Yeah.
Everything else costs money. If you want to put on an event, if you want to make a video, even video editors' time is expensive. So
it's a funny thing about websites, and everyone thinks it's free, but it comes at a great cost to, say, the proprietors of such and such websites.
Absolutely, yeah.
I speak from experience.
Exactly. Yeah.
Who makes you laugh?
I mentioned Mitch Hedberg.
Yeah.
He's my favorite comedian. I love Dave Chappelle, Louis C.K. I think everyone loves him.
I mean, isn't that just, you watch him, and you not only laugh, but then you learn a great deal.
Yeah.
And it just changes, I know it sounds like bullshit, but, you really change your outlook at life sometimes watching him.
He's a very wise man.
Yeah.
One thing he said in an interview, or someone said to him recently, was Louis C.K. supposedly grew up without a father, and in many ways he had to learn to be a father to himself. Mm-hmm. So what ended up happening was Louis grew up to be not just a very funny man, but also a very wise man who has all these lessons now that he's bestowing us with. And yeah, I feel like a better person after I
you watch something. Yeah, like I remember in the last season of the Louis show, everyone that clip of from the show where he was dating the fat girl, I mean, that went viral.
Oh yeah.
And then an episode later, he's pushing himself on the lady, and you know, so they're wondering, you know, how come someone so enlightened would do something like that? And then at the same time, you look at it from afar, and then you realize, well, that's just him learning life, I guess, and him evolving, I guess, as a person, or devolving in some
Absolutely.
Cases.
Absolutely. What I love about his TV show in particular is he is a human on that show. And I think that's what we appreciate most about him, is that we see him as a human, we see him as a very flawed human, but that's a I think that's the perfect way of portraying yourself in a, in a TV show.
And a comedian doesn't have to be funny. That's the other thing that I learned in this half an hour that he does. Not, I mean, there's some stuff in there that's some of the best, like that thing with the where he talks, he reenacts, I guess, his past with the kid that plays him and the pot and the Jeremy Renner as the drug dealer. I mean, that's some of the best acting I've seen on television in
ages. It's riveting.
Yeah.
It's very serious stuff. And, you know, he's mentioned how Louis C.K. actually doesn't like a lot of funny television, precisely because when you watch, say, a TV show these days that's supposed to be funny, like The Big Bang Theory, there's this constant, you know, wit that happens. There's this constant, you know, joke making, and there's this pressure to laugh all the time, but that's not what real life is like.
Yeah.
No, real, you know, good storytelling involves both biting humor and also long stretches of time where you're not funny at all.
So is this your day job, or have you got a career other than this?
No, I have a few jobs that I'm working on right now. I am a freelance graphic designer. Recently, I've been doing a little bit of graphic design work for Brown University. And I'm also a copywriter at a startup here in Vancouver. So I've kind of cobbled together a freelance writing/design career on the side.
That's what a lot of people in this town, you know.
Yeah.
That's how you make ends meet, I guess. Make
Absolutely.
A living. Make a career. Is this what you want to do, though, as a career? Be a satirist? Be a humorist?
It's funny because doing the Syrup Trap, I've kind of exercised two parts of my brain. On the one hand, I've had to do a lot of writing and get better as a writer, and I really do enjoy writing, but I've also had to be very entrepreneurial. I've had to organize people. Mm-hmm. I've had to market things. So I see myself in that dual kind of role, continuing to write, continuing to do humor stuff, but I'd also like to use my other skills as an organizer and as a manager to help other creative people, you know, build things.
Yeah, I think that's important. I think anybody who does anything creative, it's a much more, it becomes more important if you're helping out other people, I suppose.
There are so many creative people who are good, are great artists,
yeah.
but are terrible at everything else.
Yeah.
And, you know, there is this expectation these days that, you know, everyone should be able to manage themselves like a small business. Everyone should be a professional. But I think that's an unreasonable expectation of most people. I do think most people should be able to focus on their art while someone helps them with all the other organizational stuff. I think that's a very reasonable arrangement to have, and I hope to help people. Yeah.
So let's go through the Patreon, the scheme and how that works, and how people can go to the website, patreon.com/syruptrap. Mm-hmm. And there are certain benefits, I guess, if you donate or you make a contribution, a monthly contribution at a certain level, right?
Yes. So Patreon, just for people who don't know, it's a little bit different from Kickstarter in that when you donate to a Kickstarter, you donate once and that's it. And someone just tries to get as much money from you as possible, and it's not sustainable at all. What Patreon lets you do is lets you sign up for a small monthly donation, and it creates a sustainable stream of funding. We have several reward levels. For $1 a month, you become a Syrup Trap subscriber. You get a thank you email, and you've helped satire stay in Canada. For $3 a month, you'll get access to behind-the-scenes stuff and stuff that isn't available to everyone else. For $10 a month, you'll get, in addition to all that other stuff, a Syrup Trap t-shirt and a digital copy of our upcoming print edition, which will be a physical print magazine that we do a very small run of. No new satire, it'll all be fiction and cartoons and stuff like that. We're really looking forward to that. So you'll get a digital copy of the print edition. For $20 a month, you will get the physical edition of the print edition. For, I think it's $50 a month, you get to choose between two options. In addition to everything else that I've mentioned, you either get to have your face photoshopped onto an oil painting of a famous person of our choosing, and then we print it out on a canvas and we'll mail it to you. And then what is the second option? The second option is to have dinner with us in Vancouver at a restaurant of your choice. And then this final prize level, $200 a month, I don't think anyone's going to take us up on it. But if they do, they have a variety of ridiculous prizes to choose from. One of them is you get to have a lock of genuine Syrup Trap Writer's hair. Another one is a personalized proof for N equals NP, which is worth $1 million. We can also design a role-playing game of your choice, a text-based role-playing game. And I'm forgetting what the other... They're just.
But they can go to the Patreon page and they can see it,
you can check
it
out. Yeah. Those are some ridiculous prize levels. I don't think you're going to donate $200 a month. I don't think anyone likes the Syrup Trap that much. But if you do, we have some pretty crazy prizes lined up for you.
And even $1 a month, I mean, that helps, doesn't it?
Look, if just 10% of our readers each donated $1 a month, we'd have $10,000 a month coming in, and we could fulfill all of our goals and then some.
The country.
We could change the the media landscape in this country. And it's just $1.
Yeah, it's easy to do. I mean, I'm not technically savvy, and I was able to do it. You put your information in, and you can set your level, and you can change it at any time. You can cancel it at any time. I don't know, see why you would. But, so, you know, lots of luck to you guys, because, I mean, this is, as I said at the outset, this is very necessary stuff, and you guys have done a good job already, and I can't wait to see what you'll do with the help that you'll get from your readers.
Thank you so much, Joe, and thank you so much for all the support so far, and thanks for having me on the show to make my case to your audience.
You're very welcome. This Syrup Trap, it's syruptrap.ca. There's no "the" in the URL. Patreon.com/syruptrap, and then of course the Twitter handle at syruptrap. Nick Zarzecki, and his website is at nickz.ca. Nick Zarzecki joined me in studio here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunta.